From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the NASA conspiracies with Nick Redfern. Get ready for that. And a hello to Coast Guard member Nick and his wife Jill, avid Coast to Coast listeners. I told them I'd do that for both of them this Valentine's Day. Hope you had a great one. Here's what's happening. A 4.3 earthquake hit Mount St. Helens in that area, followed by two more quakes minutes later. They were smaller. The first quake was reportedly initially at a 3.3 magnitude quake. Then it was upped to a 4.3. Jim Berkland, geologist, on the line with us now. Jim, you know, if these things get any bigger, that's pretty serious in that area, isn't it?
Wow, that's biggest in 30 years, and it brings a real deja vu because I was still a Santa Clara County geologist, and we had a monthly earthquake prediction chart where it was $10 for the winner of the largest earthquake in a 2.5 hour period. Mm-hmm. And a little secretary was very happy to get it at a 4.3 right under Mount St. Helens. And I was being interviewed about a week later on top of the mountain, waving my hands over the Calaveras Fault, and the program director for a show back in the East Coast, The Invisible Earthquakes and Volcanoes. And he said, well, speaking of other things, Jim, what do you think about Mount St. Helens? And I said, I think that volcano means business, and I'd give it a 50-50 chance to erupt this year, 1980, and become the first active volcano in the 48 states since Mount Lassen back in 1914.
Well, that's all we need is to have that happen again. A volcanologist once told me, Jim, that if you get a series of earthquakes bigger than threes, that could be a problem there. So this was a 4.3.
As I got back to the office, they said, Jim, did you hear about that Mount St. Helens erupted today? And so I had predicted it within an hour. And then, of course, the big one hit on May 18th of 1980, a 5.0. But meanwhile, it had a bunch of other fours, and some of which were accompanied by actual volcanic eruption.
Now, Jim, it's too early to say, though, whether Mount St. Helens is going to go or not, right?
Oh, quite. But okay. When you see the coincidence here, also an X-flare, which has been very rare, the solar flare. And we had an X-flare just 2 days after the World Series quake. And on the very day of the 6.2 quake, which would have been the strongest in the Bay Area since 1911, in 1984, we had a 6.2, and it was on the day of an X-flare and X-13. And in 1980, in November, there was an X-9 flare on the day of a 7.4 quake at Eureka.
And we just had a M6.6 flare, the strongest flare to hit this year. The flare was categorized by NOAA as the strongest they've seen in a while. This powerful solar flare hurled into space when super hot gases erupted on the sun. That was on Sunday, causing a display of aurora borealis lights everywhere along the northern United States overnight. The sun unleashed the solar flare from a sunspot region that was barely visible last week. Now it's nearly eight times the width of the planet Earth. So we're going to monitor these because this sunspot is pointed right at us right now, and that could be a problem. Well, could it be Planet X? Scientists may soon be able to prove the existence of a gas giant in the solar system, which could be four times the size of Jupiter, according to astrophysicists. The two have proposed Tycho's existence in order to explain a change in path of comets entering the solar system. We're going to attempt to talk to those two astrophysicists in the not-too-distant future, because this indeed could be Planet X. Wouldn't that be something? Well, NASA's Stardust spacecraft zipped close by Comet Tempel 1 tonight in a cosmic Valentine's Day rendezvous to take a new look at the icy wanderer. The cosmic flyby marks the second comet visited by the Stardust spacecraft, and none other than Richard C. Hoagland continues to monitor this because NASA is taking some incredible pictures with this, aren't they, Richard?
Right at this moment, the Stardust spacecraft, which is about 3 AU away from the Earth, an AU is an astronomical unit, the distance of the Earth to the Sun. So this thing is really far away. And a little over about 40 minutes ago, it took 72 pictures, 72 images, CCD images. And then they had to roll the spacecraft over on its back so the antenna, which is going to send those images digitally back to Earth over the next several hours during COAST, will actually get to Earth. So we're sitting here watching our screens, waiting for a spacecraft which is performed. I mean, this thing is 12 years old, George. This is a reused, recycled.
It's remarkable.
Get the absolute last bang for the buck out of your missions, and everything is performing flawlessly, and we should get the most amazing images of this comet, Tempel 1, that a previous NASA spacecraft about 6 years ago, the so-called Deep Impact spacecraft, actually tossed a 300-pound slug into as it flew by and took pictures.
That's right.
The problem was we didn't get to see the crater the slug produced. The Deep Impact was kind of like a no-show because the dust was too thick and they couldn't see through it. So now 5 years later, 6 years later, this spacecraft recycled from another comet mission in 2006 called Stardust 1 is going to fly by in non-real time, in virtual reality. It's already happened, of course, and will send us those pictures, and we may. George, the real weird thing is here, we may not get to see the crater that Deep Impact caused 6 years ago. You know why?
Why?
We may be flying by the wrong side of the comet tonight.
Oh, no. Well, anyway, so it's exciting. Hey, by the way, while all this exciting stuff is going on, Richard, the Obama administration is working on a plan to cut NASA's budget.
This is bizarre, and we need to do at least an hour, if not a whole show, with some other participants, because they are eviscerating the NASA of old, and the NASA of new is not here yet, and we're kind of going to fall between the cracks, and the bridge won't get built, and there's a huge amount of other stuff going on behind the scenes. So, yeah, we should take a decent amount of time and go through this, because it's American taxpayers' dollars, and if this audience doesn't try to get what we really need, there's nobody of a constituency on this planet that can get what we really need.
All right, Richard, thanks. Richard's website, enterprisemission.com. Shoppers looking to update their wardrobes may find their money won't stretch as far. As the world economy tries to recover and demand for goods rises, a surge in raw material and labor costs is squeezing retailers and manufacturers who've run out of ways to pare expenses. Cotton has more than doubled in price over the past year, hitting all-time highs. They say look for clothing prices to rise 10% starting this spring. Good news for General Motors workers. They're going to extend millions of dollars in bonuses to most of its 48,000 hourly employees. Some of them will get checks of about $4,000. Not bad for a company that was ready to bite the dust a few years ago. Well, now what's happening in Iran and Bahrain and Yemen? Clashes between Iranian police and tens of thousands of protesters in central Tehran, killing one person as opposition supporters tried to evoke the spirit of Egypt's recent popular uprising. But the Iranians are fighting back, so we shall see what happens there. My prediction was that this would happen in Iran, as most Iranians love the Western way of life, and they want those mullahs out. A Connecticut lawmaker wants to create the country's first state registry for people convicted of gun crimes. A proposal, he says, will help police track and deter repeat offenders. Opponents worry it'll be costly, unnecessary, and an excessive step. University study says that energy drinks pose serious risks to kids. It's the University of Miami School of Medicine that says, look, be careful. If kids have diabetes, if they're prone to seizures, cardiac abnormalities, or mood and behavior disorders, you might want to be careful about some of these energy drinks that they take. In a remarkable turnabout, federal health officials say many Americans are getting way too much fluoride, and it's causing spots on children's teeth and perhaps other more serious problems. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services wants to lower the recommended level of fluoride in drinking water for the first time in nearly 50 years. In a moment, we'll be talking with dentist Bill Osmundson. I think Bill believes that there's even more, too much more fluoride in our water, and he wants that reduced even more, maybe eliminated altogether. Bill is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. The government first began urging municipal water systems to add fluoride in the early 1950s. And since then, it's now been put in toothpaste, mouthwash. It's also in a lot of bottled water. Be careful there. It's in soda. Some kids even take fluoride supplements. Heck, I remember when I was a kid, they would come to the school and give us fluoride treatments. God, they signed me up for that, and I had to go through like five sessions. A couple of years ago, Dr. Bill Osmundson was my guest. He is a leading dentist in the fight against fluoride use, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bill, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, George.
Now, the government's saying, okay, maybe there's a little too much fluoride. Let's take some of it out, but it's not going far enough yet, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. It's just reducing the excess increases. I mean, we're getting more and more fluoride from more and more sources. So this is slowing it down some, but we're still getting more than what we were, and that was way too much.
Let's go back a little bit, back in the 50s. How did they even decide, Bill, to put fluoride in our drinking water?
Well, they had all this waste from the phosphate fertilizer industry and aluminum manufacturing. It's a toxic waste, and what was happening is it was going out into the countryside from the smokestacks from this phosphate fertilizer companies, and it was causing genetic damage to the wildlife, and the EPA stepped in and said, look, you can't do that. You got to spray some water in the smokestack and get that junk down and put it in tanker cars and take it to a waste product disposal area because you can't put it in the ocean, you can't put it in the air, and you can't put it in the rivers. And so this stuff was starting to build up. And some people said, well, it's good for your teeth, so why don't we just put it in the water? And the EPA said, yeah, let's drink it. That's a good idea. Let's all drink it.
We won't put it in the oceans, but we'll put it in our drinking water.
Well, it's more toxic than lead. And so, you know, would you brush your teeth with lead? Would you swallow and drink lead on purpose?
No way.
No way. Of course not. And you know what, where we're getting a bunch of our stuff now from on the fluoride, where it's coming from?
Where?
China.
No.
You see, we don't have enough of the garbage ourselves, and so what we do is we get it out of China and Japan.
Now, tell me about the fluorosis. What is that?
Well, fluorosis is white spots or brown spots on the teeth. It's a discoloration of the teeth, and it's just a sign that a person has ingested too much fluoride when they were young, when the teeth were developing. And I tell people it's a little bit like if you saw somebody that was obese, and you say, okay, that person is obese. Now, some people say, well, obese is a sign of a wealth, that you've had enough money to buy enough food so that you could eat a little extra, and you got a little extra fat. Okay, well, that's a good sign. Other people would say, no, it's an ugly sign. I don't like it. But it's a cosmetic, and there's no question. Now, if all we said about dental fluorosis was, well, it's a cosmetic, well, fine, cosmetic. You like it, you don't like it, that's up to you. And if obesity, we said, well, it's just cosmetic. You like it, you don't like it, fine. But obesity is a sign that there's other problems, that there's more weight on the knees, that there's more problems with the heart. It's a sign of other health problems. And exactly the same thing with dental fluorosis. Dental fluorosis, the government, the CDC would like to tell you that it's just a cosmetic problem, but it actually is a sign that you had too much fluoride and many other things have been damaged in your body.
Well, you know, I've been looking at some people with this kind of discoloration. I always thought they were on methamphetamines or something. I guess not, huh?
No. You can get dark teeth and some decay and everything from meth and crack and those kinds of things, but that's usually that really rots the teeth rapidly. Soda pop can do it, too, and it rots the teeth fast. If you leave the soda pop on your teeth too long, don't brush and floss, or the meth mouth can be just a tragedy of problems for the mouth. But dental fluorosis is much more gentle and mild. You don't see it as much. And the reason, of course, that they put the fluoride in the water is the flawed theory that it's reducing dental decay. And I know if there are dentists listening or dental hygienists or the establishment that's listening, they're going to go, oh, yeah, it's so good for us. But it's not. It really doesn't lower decay. It's true that dental decay has dropped over the last 60, 70 years, but it's dropped the same whether there's been fluoridation or not. In Europe,
they don't have fluoridation. Their decay rates are the same as ours. And in communities that have never had fluoridation, you're looking at the same amount of decay, but you have to be careful and compare the communities, making sure that there are other confounding factors that are similar. So it doesn't reduce decay, and we're getting too much of the stuff.
Has it outlived its usefulness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a mistake in the beginning. Back in the 50s, 40s actually is when the research was really started on it. And the big key on it was the research was hidden in the Manhattan Project. And they wanted to build an atomic bomb fast and dirty so that we could stop that war.
That's
which
right.
is fair enough. But they didn't let the research out showing that the fluoride was really causing problems because they didn't want to scare people. And so they built the bombs quick and fast and dirty, and the research was in the Manhattan Project all sealed up and tied up, and so we never got at it till later. We haven't had new research in that same area until later, and we didn't see the problems until now. We're seeing them vivid and large and terrible.
Okay, so it causes spots on teeth, but they also said perhaps more serious problems. What are they?
Well, see, the National Academy of Science raised a whole bunch of serious concerns, and here's where the science gets a little bit tight to understand, and that is that you look at the science in different ways. For instance, the EPA takes stuff out of our water when the science becomes strong enough that shows that it's harmful.
Right.
The FDA doesn't allow something to be started until the science shows that it's safe. So each of the different organizations started this problem from a different angle. And so if you go to the EPA and say, well, is the fluoride safe? They go, well, we're not showing real strong evidence, real strong. How do you mean by strong? Well, to the National Research Council, they said, we want you to bet the farm that it's causing a problem. Absolutely certain. Now, that's a real problem because there are a lot of people who say that even tobacco smoking is not absolutely certain. I mean, most scientists would say that tobacco smoking is a problem. So to get the level of confidence in the science to be high enough to where everybody's unanimous on anything is difficult. And that's what they did to say, well, are we unanimous that it causes dental fluorosis? Yes. Are we unanimous that it causes skeletal fluorosis? Yes. Are we unanimous that it causes fractured bones in the elderly? Yes. Are we unanimous that it's causing thyroid damage? Well, not unanimous, but there's strong evidence, and yes, okay, it may. We've known that it caused thyroid damage since about 1850, so we knew that that's happening, but how much at the level of it is in fluoride in water, that concentration, is that a problem? Well, that's a little more uncertain, but not if you look at the data carefully. The same thing when you start looking at the kidneys. Kidney stones. I have patients, I'm a dentist, and I have patients who are having problems with kidney stones, and I say, get rid of all of your fluoride. And I talk to them a year or two later, how are your kidney stones? Oh, we haven't had any. I said, good. Don't have the fluoride because that increases the problems. It may not cure it, but it certainly increases it. And then you talk about the one that really gets me, though, because I've been doing petitions to the Food and Drug Administration and to the EPA and the Health and Human Services and all the rest of that type of thing. But when I did my petition to the FDA, one of the things that they request is both an environmental impact study or a report evaluation, mm-hmm. and the other was an economic impact. And I'd never, ever seen an economic impact for fluoridation, because about half the fluoride we get is from the water, and about half the fluoride we get is from other sources such as toothpaste and
mouthwash,
and dental filling materials and medical antibiotics, and oh, there's many, many other sources that we get it from, Teflon pans and carpets, and it goes on and on.
Jeez, it's wonderful. Everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah, yeah, it's a big thing. Floor polish, and it's a wonderful lubricant, and it's just everywhere. So what I did is I started looking at the economic impact. And, George, you won't believe this. I mean, this is absolutely insane, because what happens is the evidence is very good that it's causing a drop in IQ. Now, intelligence is very important.
Really?
You know, dentists can fix teeth. Nobody fixes brains as far as IQ. And so if we're going to fry our IQ, then we've got serious, serious problems.
That's bizarre. We're going to take this commercial, but I want to talk a little bit more about that and then find out, are all the states the same? Are they all mandated the same, or are they different levels in different states? And then we'll take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Nick Redfern joins us as we talk about the NASA conspiracies. We're going to get his views on what he thinks might be going on. And we have a poll going on at coasttocoastam.com, by the way, our Insta poll about NASA and ETs. So go on up there and register your vote. You shall see the results are pretty fascinating. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with dentist Bill Osmundson as we talk about fluoride in your water on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Dr. Bill Osmundson right here on Coast to Coast AM. So, Bill, you say it shows that the more fluoridation, the lower the IQ.
Yes.
Hmm.
There's about 25 human studies and over 100 animal studies showing that there's a lower IQ. In fact, if we compare the states in the United States, those that fluoridate the least and then rank them until we get to those that have almost 100% fluoridation, we find that there's a tripling of mental retardation in states with more fluoridation. We find that that's about a half a standard deviation, which is correct. It's in keeping with the studies that they have compared in developing communities where there's fluoride naturally occurring in the water, about an 8 IQ point drop. And we know that when a communities or a person who is for each IQ loss or less they have of IQ, it's about $1,000 per year lower income. So if you had a 5 IQ point loss or less than other people, your income is going to be about $5,000 less. You'd multiply that by 225 million people that are being fluoridated, and you can see that we get over $1 trillion a year just from that one item of negative economic impact per year in the United States. And hopefully that kind of information is going to help the FDA and Health and Human Services start looking at the data more. That's one of the reasons that they recently dropped the amount of fluoride that they recommended from one part per million down to about 0.7 parts per million. In other words, about a 30% drop in fluoride is what we should be experiencing, less fluoride. But that's just slowing down the increase. At the same time, the EPA reviewed the fluoride that we're ingesting and said, oh, well, we're going to allow another 30% or a third more fluoride and call it safe. That's because we're getting so much more. When they finally looked at the data, they said, well, we're getting so much more. How do we rectify that?
They were in conflict with each other, huh?
Oh, of course, of course. They said, well, it's okay to have more, and we're going to drop it a whole bunch. And even then, we still are not protecting infants. You know, mother's milk has almost no fluoride in it. And if you're mixing formula with public fluoridated water, that infant's getting 170 to 250 times more fluoride in it in that formula with fluoridated water than if they were getting mother's milk.
Who mandates the amount of fluoride? States or the feds?
There is no one.
No one?
No one is in charge of this thing. That's been my biggest problem. No one's in charge of it. Now, Congress, give them credit. Over the years, they have written the laws very clear. They said any substance used with the intent to prevent disease and a whole bunch of treat and all those kinds of things, any substance is considered a drug. And the FDA, Center for Drug Evaluation Research, they are in charge of drugs. And the manufacturer needs to go with them and say, look, we got this new product. We'd like to market it and tell people that it does great things. And the FDA will look at the science and say, okay, good, you got it. Go ahead and market it. And here's the kind of warning labels that we need to put on it. And this is the dosage that should be done, et cetera, et cetera. But with fluoridation, the FDA says, yeah, we're in charge, but we're going to defer regulatory action. We're not going to do anything about it. So the Center for Disease stepped in and said, well, it's safe. And well, we're not going to really say it's safe too much, but it is safe. And you need to have about one part per million because, well, that's what we determined back about 1950, and there was no real good research to show that it was one part per million that was good, but we're going to call it one. And then for safety, well, we'll go to the EPA, and maybe they'll call it safe also and protect it so that they don't lower the contaminant level too much, and it's a protected pollutant according to the EPA scientists. So no agency really takes charge of it and says, okay, this is our responsibility. States look to the federal government. The federal government says, no, it's the states that fluoridate.
And what about cities? I mean, like Los Angeles. Does Los Angeles control the amount?
Well, Los Angeles City doesn't. It's the water district there in Inland Water.
Yeah,
whoever they are. And they were the ones, and I watched a video of it. They got a whole bunch of people who were in favor. They gave them 3 minutes. There were two people who were opposed to it, and they gave them 3 minutes also. And they said that this is something that's good and safe, the majority, and it was railroaded on through.
That's crazy, Bill. They're lining up to talk to you here, so let's take some calls. We'll pick it up by going to Topic, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, David, go ahead.
That's a Topak.
Topak.
Topak. Watch the end of The Grapes of Wrath, and you'll see the Model T's going across the river where I'm at. But I'm so glad that you have your guest on, Dr. Osmundson?
Osmundson, yes.
Osmundson, go ahead.
Osmundson, okay. Well, I live right here between the border of Arizona and California, and I have a well. And I've been here for 10 years, and for 5 years, I drank that water out of my well. It tasted fine. It smelled fine. And across the river is a PG&E station. And you know Aaron Brockovich, right?
Oh, yeah. We've heard of her.
Well, they went after PG&E to find out if there was hexavalent chromium.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, this is a nice free way to get my well tested. And no chromium, but I was consuming over 3.5 times the maximum daily amount per the ADEQ for adults. And it destroyed my teeth. That if it sounds like I talk funny, that's because half of my teeth are gone.
Jeez. So would that do that, Bill?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an authority on what, you know, the exact per amounts that he had in his well. But absolutely, if you're getting too much of any kind of a toxin, it'll cause problems. There's probably confounding problems with it. But yes, definitely. And too much fluoride will cause an increase in decay. For instance, tooth fracture is a problem, especially as we get a little older. We see that there's a tripling the amount of tooth fracture in fluoridated areas. You add that with other types of toxins, and it's going to make it even worse. So when you compare dental expenses in the fluoridated, non-fluoridated communities, you do not see a savings in cost. Now, the CDC will say, oh, yeah, there's a savings. For every dollar spent on fluoridation, you save $38. That's not really true. That's just estimates of assumptions. So if you assume there's a benefit and you estimate how much there is based on your assumed benefit, then you come out with these estimates that sound really good. But when you go and measure it and say, okay, the community, how much are they spending on dentistry there in the fluoridated areas and the non-fluoridated areas? They're basically the same amount of money in both places unless you kind of cook the data. But there's only one study that's really fairly good, and it didn't show much difference at all.
And you're saying that it shows that over-fluoridation cracks teeth too?
Absolutely. They become brittle, like bones. We know that there's more fractured bones as people get older with more fluoride. The same thing happens if you're using fluoride. It builds up in the system. It builds up in the serum of the blood, and then that goes into the teeth, that goes into the bones, and the way you get rid of the fluoride is through your kidneys. And if you're not able, your kidneys can't get rid of the fluoride fast enough, then it builds up into the bones and in the teeth, and those become brittle, and in old age, why, you sit down on the couch and your hip breaks, or you bite down on a raisin or something even soft, and all of a sudden that tooth, just the side of it breaks off. So the dentist does crowns on it. This is why it's far better to, when you're testing something like fluoride, to measure the cost of treatment, because then you start including the cosmetic damage, you start including the tooth fractures, you can start including these other side effects, and it doesn't show any benefit. So if fluoride does reduce decay a little bit, the side effects just to the teeth alone make it so that there's no cost benefit.
Far outweigh. Stephanie, Houston, Texas, and it's your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted
Hello.
To say a couple of things. My daughter was born in 93 here in the Houston area, and her pediatrician prescribed fluoride drops.
Yes.
Like,
don't you have fluoride
in
Houston?
I don't think it's pure, but whatever. Like, to add to, like, I had to give them to her in her mouth.
Right.
And then in 95, I had another daughter, same pediatrician, same area, et cetera, did not prescribe them.
Right.
And what's the difference between the two?
Well, one understood that the fluoride was not good, and the other one thought the fluoride was good. Or the second option is maybe they thought you were getting fluoride, not getting fluoride with the first daughter, and so you needed a supplement.
Oh, no, we had major fluoride. This is Texas.
So did you find a difference, Stephanie?
So what happened is they doubled the dose on you, and that made it much worse for your first child. I mean, she's down, what, 5-10 IQ points from what she would have been if
Actually,
that hadn't happened.
This is a weird thing, and I didn't call to argue this point. I certainly did not. I was just amazed with all your talk that you never mentioned that doctors actually prescribed it for infants.
Yes. Well,
yes. Okay. But actually, not to argue with you, but the first daughter is super smart.
And that's great.
Now, maybe she has no common sense.
Well, it depends. You know what? IQ doesn't mean brain power intelligence. Not all the time, does it, Bill?
You're right. Cognitive ability is where it hits it the most on the IQ. But
I've seen people with high IQs that can't even function in their day-to-day existence. You know what I mean?
True.
I mean, they're smart, they're brilliant, but they can't do practical things.
Yeah, and just because we have, say, 100 IQ point or 120 IQ point, if we didn't have the fluoride, we'd have 125 or 130. So we may say, well, this person is brilliant. There's no question they're brilliant. But they'd even be more brilliant if they didn't have the fluoride, because when you look at communities that are fluoridated, it hits all of them, the mentally retarded clear up to the gifted and everybody in between. The whole bell curve skews on down. So that means that we would be even smarter if we didn't have the fluoride. And I'm sure that she would be smarter if she didn't have the fluoride. Now, maybe that even scare you more because she's so smart now, but she would even be more gifted if she hadn't had the fluoride.
Let's go to Carthage, Missouri. Brett's there. Hey, Brett, go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
This is 10-year anniversary of the first time I listened to Coast to Coast.
Wow, wonderful.
Great. Shout out to my cousin David and Springfield Jim. And my question is, I've been a healthcare worker all my life, and I was stuck in the emergency room one night by a patient that got an IV needle stuck in me. Patient had hepatitis C. Now I have hepatitis C. Does the fluoride cause any problems on the liver?
Oh, yes, definitely. It increases liver problems. See, it's an enzymatic reactor. It is right up there at the top of the periodic table, and it's very, very powerful with most everything. It just dissolves things. It rusts things. It is incredible as far as its strength, and that's what's beautiful about it when we want to use it as a reactive element. But it also causes reactions to so much in our body because it loves calcium and it will react with the calcium. It loves the enzymes. The enzymes are an interesting thing. For instance, when we put sugar in our bodies, that sugar gets burned. Now, if you were to try to burn sugar, you have to get it very, very hot in order to have it actually turn into a fire and get the energy off of it. But our body is able to burn that sugar at low temperature, at body temperature, because of the enzymes, and we get that energy off the sugar. Well, that's the kind of thing that the fluoride goes in and it interacts with it. It interacts with the cells. As a healthcare worker, you know that about the mitochondria and the cell membrane. Both of those are damaged with the fluoride, and so when it comes to the liver, it does increase the load on the liver. And if I had liver problems, I would definitely avoid using fluoride toothpaste. I'd avoid using the fluoride drinking water. Those are the two biggest sources. And when I go to the dental office, I wouldn't use have them give me the fluoride treatments. There are a couple situations where they say the evidence is fair for using fluoride topically.
And by the way, you can find toothpaste without fluoride in it.
Absolutely.
There's some natural ones out there.
Yes.
Even in the big drugstores, they're there. You got to look for them, but they're there.
Yep.
They always cost a little bit more, though. Why?
Because they're not as much sold. I mean, it's supply and demand. If there were millions of people buying them, why, they could drop the prices on them.
All right, let's go next to Denise in Ensignville, North Carolina, first-time caller. Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We'll squeeze you in here.
Hi, Denise.
Okay. Hi. I was just wondering if you were aware of the Fluoride Action Network.
I sure am. I'm one of the board members.
Okay. I know, because back in the 90s, Dr. Paul Carnett was working on this issue and, helped to develop the Fluoride Action Network.
Yes.
And, I have a question about, can fluoride affect your joints?
Absolutely. Like in arthritic-like symptoms, osteoarthritic-like symptoms.
Jeez.
It makes it stiff on your joints. It makes them so that they have more pain. You can't move your joints as well. And so it definitely it works in the joints, making it a lot more sore. Yes.
Got about a minute and a half or so to go, Bill. If people need more information on fluoride, specifically in the cities and locations that they live, can you call the water department?
That's the best thing to do. Have your specific address, call the water department, and find out what it is, and ask them what you can do to get the fluoride out of it, that you don't want the fluoride, that you're requesting it, that not to have fluoride. What can you do to get the fluoride out? And they'll work with you, because you have to have special filters, and they should actually be helping you out with that. If you don't want the fluoride, which I don't, then it needs to be filtered on out, and just your regular home filters, like the Brita charcoal-type filters, they don't take the fluoride out.
It's not going to work. How about reverse osmosis? Will that work?
That does take it on out, but it does make your water more acidic, which is not quite as good.
It's not good. You want a balance. You want that more alkaline in your system, too.
Yep,
so
you're right.
Darned if you do and darned if you don't, huh?
Well, we need to just not be putting it in the water, because it's a drug that is unapproved by the FDA, and that means that the cities, the water districts, are the biggest illegal drug pushers in the nation.
Sounds like a long time ago, somebody made a lot of money doing this, pitched it to government, and in it went.
They did, and they're still making a bunch of money on it.
Unbelievable. Happens all the time. Follow the money trail, Bill, then you get all your answers. You know that?
That's what somebody else told me, and I am getting the answers by going that direction.
Okay, thanks, Bill. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Also, you can follow us with our Twitter feeds and our Facebook links as well, just by going to coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in just a moment, Nick Redfern joins us as we talk about the NASA conspiracies. I don't believe everything Nick's going to be talking about, so I'm going to have to call him on a few things, but stand by for that.